is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. 20 years ago, getting your bell rung on the football field may have meant taking a play or two off, having some smelling salts waved in front of your nose, and going back to play the rest of the game. Research from the National Center for Injury Prevention shows nearly half of all high school players sustain at least one concussion each season. Kevin Guskowitz has been monitoring the impact concussions have on football players at the University of North Carolina and recently shared what he's learned at UW-La Crosse. He spoke with WPR's Steve Roysom and starts the conversation with a basic definition of what a concussion is.
So concussion is by definition, a traumatically induced alteration in brain function that is typically caused by a blow to the head or an indirect blow to the head by the chest or the body being driven toward the ground or toward another object. And it is important to note that it doesn't always need to involve loss of consciousness.
Has our definition changed over the years?
Well, I think that through the International Consensus Group on Sport Concussion, they have expanded the definition. But I think the original definition of this traumatically induced alteration in brain function has sort of been fairly standard. And the more recent definitions have just emphasized that it can result in an array of symptoms, signs and symptoms that are not necessarily linked to loss of consciousness or memory loss, which some of the earlier guidelines suggested that if you hadn't had those two parameters, then you haven't had a concussion.
What do we know about concussions that maybe we didn't know, say, 2 years ago?
Well, I think we've been chasing this rather elusive threshold for concussive injury. In other words, how hard do you need to be hit in order to sustain a concussion? And some of the earlier NFL studies were trying to place a number on that 75 to 85 G's of acceleration. But I think some of the more recent studies the past few years have suggested that we may never hone in on exactly what that value is, and I'm not convinced that it's even that important that we know what it is, because different individuals have different thresholds for injury. So we have athletes in our database at the University of North Carolina that show an impact of the head at 150 G's may very well result in nothing. There are no signs or symptoms or any indication of a concussion, but we have other athletes that are impacted at 60 or 65 G's and they sustain a significant injury. So I think that that's one of the factors, one of the more recent developments.
What exactly is a G again? Maybe you slipped that through before and I missed it.
We have accelerometers in our helmets at UNC, and there are a number of other places around the country that do this. And G's, it's a measure of gravitational force that's able to measure. Probably the easiest way to say it is how the forces that are applied to a structure, to the brain in this case, when an impact occurs, and it's basically the resistance against gravitational force. That's what the G stands for, gravitational force. And so fighter pilots, as an example, we know that they will sometimes pass out when they're rolling out of a turn in the air at about 10 G's of acceleration, but they're withstanding that for a very long period of time as they're rolling out of this thing for 8, 10, 12, 15 seconds. The G's that we're talking about in football players, that's a peak linear acceleration that takes place over a very short window of time, maybe 10 milliseconds of time.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio's Newsmakers on WHLA. Joining us is Kevin Guskowitz, who spoke at UWL on his research into sports-related concussions. He is a professor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. What is there left to know about concussions, and what's at stake by learning them?
Well, I think that we're trying to better understand not only what the long-term effects of concussions are, but also what are the long-term effects of subconcussive impacts to the head. So your hockey player, soccer player, football player that takes hundreds of impacts to the head in a given season or a given career that do not result in a concussion, might those also, when all added up with some sort of cumulative exposure, might that also equate to some long-term neurodegeneration such as dementia or depression? And so we're learning more about retired NFL football players and some of the late-life challenges that they have had. And while we initially want to point to those concussive episodes that they had, in reality, it may be all the subconcussives combined with the concussive episodes.
Sports stars, as you know, especially in the NFL, I am thinking of Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay Packers quarterback. I know that he received at least two concussions this season. Is that something that could come back and impact him later on?
So I think when we talk about concussion, we need to think about the short-term effects and then the long-term effects. And the short-term effects are typically that they are more at risk for a subsequent concussion after they've had that initial concussion. In fact, you're nearly at a twofold risk of a second concussion after you've had a first concussion, especially within the same season. And once you've had three prior concussions in a five-year period, you're about four to five times more likely to sustain subsequent concussions. So that's the short-term risk. The long-term risk is that once you fall into that category of two or three concussions during a career, you begin to fall into this high-risk category for depression and late-life dementia. And we know this from studying professional football players.
Since you're at UNC at Chapel Hill, are you doing any studying of the football team, the Tar Heels?
We are. We've been studying our football team as long as I've been there, for 16 seasons. The number of studies looking at neurocognitive recovery following concussion, recovery from symptoms and balance measures, and more recently we have had placed accelerometers in the helmets of our football players over the last six seasons, and we've been measuring the magnitude and location of impacts to their helmets and ultimately to their head, and looking at how those measures correlate to clinical recovery.
What do the Tar Heels think of your research? I mean, football is kind of seen as a smash mouth sort of thing. Is there a little bit of, oh, come on, man, you're kind of dampening us here?
Yeah, I mean, we try to obviously put a positive spin on the work that we're doing, and I think there are a lot of positive things that are coming out of the research, such as, I mean, there are a lot of individuals that would like to say that, well, that player just took a significant hit, a 100G impact. Let's pull them out of the game and sit them down for the next week. And what our research has found is that those big impacts do not always equate to concussion or to symptoms for any period of time. There's no relationship. So I think that's one of the positive things. Our football coaches over the past two football coaches have really embraced this research. I think they've been able to emphasize that UNC is about protecting their athletes, and the players themselves have, I think, enjoyed being able to participate in a study that might have a trickle-down effect in how we treat younger football players that may ultimately help preserve the sport.
I guess one concussion is one too many, but are we seeing a pronounced problem with college level athletes and concussions, and whether it be at the time they're playing or perhaps 10, 20 years down the line? Is there an issue at the college level as well?
Interesting question. We actually have a study that we've just been funded for that will look at comparing college players, former college players at age 50 to 60, who did not have that additional exposure of professional football, and we'll be comparing them to a group of former professional football players who have the college and at least 5 years of professional exposure to see what the differences are later in life.
Why look at that? I mean, if the concussions, there seems to be more in the NFL that are identified than in college, or maybe that's not true?
It's not true. In fact, we know that at the collegiate level, those players that have a high concussion rate in college are the same players who then are having a higher concussion rate at the professional level. And so there's a direct correlation, which speaks to the earlier statistic I gave about the increased risk of subsequent concussions once you've had earlier ones. And so I think the outcome of this research could help us better understand how many are too many, which is a question I've been asked probably 100 times over the past 10 years, you know, how many concussions are too many.
Do you keep track at all? Not necessarily data-wise, but how about high school sports? Concussions, you know, concussion problems there. I take their equipment is not as advanced as college and NFL, so a bit easier to get your bell rung at the high school level?
Well, I think the first point I want to make is that while we focus so much on football, it's really important to understand that concussions occur in all sports. We actually have had swimmers. We've had pole vaulters. We've had cross-country runners that have been hit by a deer on a cross-country course have a concussion. Sort of a bizarre one there. But we always need to expect the unexpected. And the equipment at the youth levels that you asked about, I think it, in an ideal world, it should be as effective as the equipment that's being worn at the collegiate and professional levels. The helmets need to be reconditioned every year. They need to be recertified at least every other year. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. And I think we will see some changes here over the next few years as NOCSI, which is the organization that certifies helmets for competitive sport, will, I think, be changing some of their certifying requirements, and I think we will be putting better helmets on our youth athletes and eliminating the possibility that somebody suffers a catastrophic brain injury because of poor equipment.
Just kind of explaining why we're focusing on football for the listener, and maybe I'm wrong, majority of your work ties in with football, correct?
Our work is focused on football, hockey, lacrosse, soccer, wrestling, and a little bit of gymnastics. We've seen, you know, we've studied some gymnasts, but no, we cover the gamut, and those are the sports where we've seen the most concussions. But ironically, women's basketball and women's ice hockey, if you look at the NCAA's recent concussion statistics, those are the two sports where we've seen the most significant increase in concussion rates.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that in women's ice hockey, I think that one explanation is that it is still a relatively new sport. It's a sport that that's supposed to be played different from the men's sport, but a lot of the women who play collegiate hockey grew up playing on the ice with boys. And so they've learned to be more aggressive. They were trained to be more aggressive, and they're oftentimes playing against or alongside players who have picked it up more recently, who might be skating with their head down, and they're not playing as aggressively. So I think there's a bit of a mismatch or disparity there between player type, and so I think that's one issue. I think within women's basketball, it has become a much more aggressive game than it was just 10 years ago, and in terms of the physical stature of women's basketball players today, I think is different from what it was 10, 15 years ago, and so I think that in part explains the disparity there, the increased concussion rate.
I want to go a little bit back in time, a few decades here, and I'll go back to football on this one, where back in the day, whatever day that may be, football was played with leather helmets and such. And have you read any evidence that they had huge concussion problems back then, or our players are bigger, meaner, inflict more pain?
Yeah. Well, I think part of the, I don't want to say problem, because I think it's a good thing that we're tracking these injuries today, but the injury surveillance back then was, it didn't exist. And so we're working on a lot of sort of anecdotal evidence and old war stories, if you will, about, I remember having five of those, and you know, I played through all of them, and we just didn't have good surveillance, and so I think that's part of the issue. I'm certain that there were as many concussions then as there are now. We just, because of the awareness issue now, and that today's athlete is supposed to know what a concussion is, and they're supposed to know that it's important to report it, I think that in part explains the increased incidence. And I would argue that's not such a bad thing, that while it looks like there are more concussions today, I think they're just being reported.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio's Newsmakers on WHLA. Joining us is Kevin Guskowitz, who spoke at UWL on his research into sports-related concussions. He is a professor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Dave Duerson, can you give us a little background on that and what you think we should take away from that?
Dave Duerson was a former Chicago Bear linebacker, I believe, or defensive back maybe, who committed suicide a few months ago and apparently believed that he may have had CTE, which is chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is a depositing of tau protein in the structures of the brain that is in some respects similar to Alzheimer's disease, but very different in that it has been identified in younger individuals. It's not found in the deeper structures of the cortex of the brain, but more the more superficial structures. And it's believed to be linked to earlier emotional problems, depression, and sort of irrational behaviors that present themselves at a younger age. And unfortunately, right now, we can only identify CTE upon autopsy. There's no blood test or imaging technique that can identify this right now. And so he believed that he had this injury or that he had this condition. And so apparently, and again, he's not a patient or subject of, was not a patient right. or subject of mine, but did donate his brain to science. And I know that colleagues of mine at Boston University have recently conducted an autopsy and a staining procedure on his brain tissue and have found traces of tau protein suggestive of this condition called chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
You're working, and you and your assistants, obviously, with 3,000 former NFL players. Is this funded in part by the NFL? I mean, are they wanting to look at this more so? And with why such a huge study? There's 300 former NFL players. What are you looking for when you hope this study wraps up?
So in 2001, we started the Center for the Study of Retired Athletes at University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And so we've been for about 10 years now been studying these 3,000, approximately 3,000 retired players, mostly through medical records and general health surveys. And we have conducted a number of four or five studies where we have actually brought to our campus a group or a cohort of these individuals to study various questions. And our initial work has found this increased risk of depression and cognitive impairment in retired players with three or more concussions during their professional career. The more recent studies, we've been bringing them to campus to look at things such as back pain, musculoskeletal problems that are linked to back pain, and then the cognitive impairment issues, and more recently looking at the effect of omega-3 fatty acid on slowing the progression of dementia. And those findings are still being analyzed. The results are still, the data are still being analyzed, and we should have some findings in the next 2 months.
Kind of an unusual question, but if you had a friend who had a kid who was about, he's graduating from college, going to move on to the NFL, and they come to you and say, is this a good thing? What do you tell them?
Well, there are obviously the medical considerations and as well as the financial considerations, and so you need to think about balancing those, and I'd also want to know what the individual's medical history is. Of the probably 600 retired players who have been through our center in the past 10 years, three-quarters of them look just fine, and that they, you know, I hope that I am as healthy at 50, 60, 70 years old as they are. It's the 25% that don't look that way. And so I think to answer your question, I think that you it's our responsibility as scientists and clinicians to explain what the risks are, to try to be sure that we're modifying their behavior if they are these sort of risk takers who like to lower their head and use their head as a battering ram as opposed to keeping their head out of plays, then you got to try to do everything you can to modify that behavior. So I wouldn't necessarily discourage that individual from moving to the professional ranks unless they have this significant history of concussion that I think would need to think about life after football.
Is the NFL taking significant steps, in your opinion, to help avoid concussions?
I think that the NFL has drastically improved their treatment of this injury and the attention that they've given it in the last 3 or 4 years. I think Roger Goodell, the new commissioner, has taken this very seriously, and I think that they're clearly are moving in the right direction.
Any final thoughts?
Just, I guess I'd add that I think at the youth level, this is a really important injury to be aware of. I think that there are soon to be 20 states that will have legislation in place that will mandate the way in which youth athletes should be treated following a concussion, the appropriate medical personnel to evaluate and clear athletes from participation. I hope that as a result, more schools will hire certified athletic trainers because they really are the frontline medical personnel that can help to manage these appropriately and save lives. And I think that unfortunately right now there's only about 45% of all schools nationwide that employ certified athletic trainers, and I hope that through some of the legislation that's out there that we will see that climb, because I'm convinced that will make a difference in helping to protect these young athletes from this potentially catastrophic injury.
Do you know if Wisconsin is among those states?
Wisconsin, I believe there's been discussion about legislation, but right now I don't believe they have pending legislation for Concussion Awareness Act.
Kevin Guskowitz is an exercise and sports science professor at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He's been researching the impact of concussions on college athletes and shared his knowledge during a visit to UW-La Crosse. He spoke with WPR's Steve Roysom. Coming up in the next half hour, the cities of La Crosse and Onalaska continue work on plans to develop waterfront property. We'll get some perspective on where those plans are. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We also welcome your comments and ideas. Simply follow the links on our archives page at wpr.org/lacrosse.